From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Whether out loud here on the podcast or just between us on one of our periodic late Friday afternoon phone calls, I always benefit from catching up with today's guest, Joe Lample, a.k.a. Joe Gardner. Probably no time for talking is more beneficial than around year's end, when Joe and I like to compare notes on what went well and not so much in our garden adventures. Comparing notes with a friend who's a fellow gardener can help each of us do better next time, and that's what's on the agenda today, so more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
You may know Joe Lample as Joe Gardner, host of a popular podcast by the same name and creator of a suite of online courses about gardening, or perhaps you know him from his former long-running public television program called Growing a Greener World. Joe gardens in the Atlanta area, and I don't know any home gardener who starts more seeds each season, thinks thousands and thousands and then thousands more for good measure. He's the author of The Vegetable Gardening Book, Your Complete Guide to Growing an Edible Organic Garden from Seed to Harvest, and I'm glad he's back to recap the year with us. Hi, Joe. How are you? Mr.
Hi,
thousands
Margaret.
And thousands and thousands and thousands.
I love talking to you for many reasons, but you make me laugh so much. That right there, I'm busted, but it's true. I can't deny it.
How many?
And it's in the thousands, somewhere between, yeah, closer to three than two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's normal. Sure. Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. And how many people in your family? 400? Is that what you said? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Three at home right now. And
yeah.
Yeah. So if roughly 1,000 a person, that's not normal.
No. Yes. I don't know. Okay. Well, we got that straightened out. So no resolution needed there. You're just going to go to 3,000 for next year. Great.
Perfect. Rounding up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So before we get started officially, let's have a giveaway of a copy of the Vegetable Gardening Book with a transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And I think we should also say that we're sort of doing this back and forth on both our shows, aren't we, this week?
We are. I love to pick your brain. And at the end of the year, as you already said, it's great to recap. You know, we throughout the year we talk, but it's really kind of fun to look back over the year together and assess our highs and lows. So we're doing that with each other this week. And I'm excited to hear a recap of your year.
All right. So on both of our transcripts or whatever, we'll give the links to the other one so people can, mm-hmm, listen to sort of the full story, and we'll hopefully not duplicate everything and it won't be completely boring and redundant.
It will not.
Okay, good. So if you had to characterize your 2024 growing season in a word or two, what would it be? Mine would be parched, I think.
Mine would be frustrating.
Yeah.
Due to some of the same reasons. So you gave one, but just the dryness and the heat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think was a nationwide, you know, at different times and in different intensities, I think that was nationwide. A lot, mm-hmm, of gardeners felt things in a way they hadn't before. Yeah. Yeah. And okay, so that was one, frustrating and hot and dry. What about, were there like beautiful moments? Were there victories? Were there...
Yes. The victories were, they always come in the fall for me. You know, let me set the stage again. Just, you said I live in Atlanta, but here we are known for high humidity and high heat.
Right.
And that doesn't play nicely with a lot of the things that we like to grow in the summertime, namely edibles. And so I we'll talk about this a little bit more. If you don't bring it up, I will. But, you know, we kind of tough it out through the summertime, in many cases, to get to the fall. And for me, maybe it's because of that I'm such a fan of fall gardening, whether it's flowers or vegetables or both. but it's kind of the reward or the dessert after the liver and onions sometimes that, you know, you put up with to get to that time. So the high ends for me, again, this year, were just the thrill of the low maintenance, less hectic pace of the fall garden for me. And I particularly found it extra peaceful and rewarding this year because I recognized this year more than any other year that I can recall how much I enjoyed the fall garden because I wasn't racing the clock or dealing with diseases or pest issues like I had been in prior months this year.
It's interesting you say that because we were just so dry and so frustrated, those two words, in the late summer and all the way through the fall. It was just brutal here as well, which is very unusual for us. But in a way, there was a silver lining for a gardener like myself who's been putting off projects. You know, you always have a list and you do the triage, but you don't get them all done.
You're right.
Well, it was like the frost-free season and the, you know, it wasn't snowing. It wasn't even pouring like it sometimes is in the fall. It was, or too cold to be out there or anything. It just went on and on and on. It seemed like September, but with no rain forever and ever and ever, and well into the end. I think the end of November. And so I just kept doing projects that had been put off again and again. Do you know what I mean? Like stuff that was, So that was good in a way to have like an extra, you know, stretch there in the fall.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes. And we had a pleasant fall that where the temperatures were cooler earlier than normal for us. But without the rain and what I've been used to for many years, most of the years I can remember, is just that classic to me fall weather where you get the kind of the gloomy afternoons of this rainy, light, misty rains in the cooler weather throughout the fall quite a bit. But this year we just didn't get that until just a couple weeks ago for the first time this season. So in many ways, you know, I got to spend more time out in the fall garden because it wasn't so nasty with the weather and the plants were very happy. And I have to attribute a lot of that to great soil that holds the moisture that it needs because I did not do any supplemental watering. But it was just kind of a magical, and every fall here is beautiful for the fall garden. But this year, just more than ever, it was extra special.
Okay.
Yeah.
However.
Always however.
However, you know, I know you know, you're just talking about you didn't do any supplemental watering. And one of the things I couldn't, and if we have summers like this from now on, I can't because I have a well and I can't, you know, risk the well when the streams near me are dry, when the stream beds are dry. I mean, I'm not going to use my well except for essential stuff, right?
Right.
So I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like I have to adjust, you know, I have this big, not big compared to yours, but old, you know, 30-year-old, layout of raised bed, conventional, you know, raised bed boxes, 20 by 5, most of them are beds that I've always grown edibles in and so forth, and they're out in the full sun. And, you know, it's harder to keep a lot of things happy there, even up north here in the peaks, in the hottest part of the season. So I'm thinking, how am I going to do that? And is that what I want to do out in those boxes for forever now? So what about you? Any changes in that?
Yes. I am used to filling up 16 large raised beds with all edibles. But in the past couple years, I've finally come around and said, why am I doing that? Because as you alluded to a minute ago, really, there's just two of us now. And I've got way more food than we can even give away. I mean, we do end up giving it away, but it's work. And as much as I love growing the food, I'm not a fan of harvesting. It's not my favorite thing to do. I love the chase or the challenge, but once you get everything ripe and it's ready to harvest, that's kind of the goal you've gotten there. And now really it is the bounty that we should be taking advantage of fully, but we do that, I should say, but it's way more than we can use. So we are able to give it away, but that requires extra work and time. And I have not enough time and I've done enough work by then.
Yeah.
So I am actually, as of 2 years ago, we started dedicating some of our raised bed space for edibles to flowers, both ornamental and, you know, pollinator attracting native perennials. And we're migrating more into that side of it. So I probably on the record somewhere of saying this year and with 2025 coming up next season, I'll take half of the 16 beds and dedicate them to flowers, which is a first for me. And even then, with 8 large beds, that's still going to be more food than my family can consume.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, the insects are going to be happy to see all those flowers. That's that's great.
Yes. And it makes us happy. I say us, to myself, my family, and Toby, my farm manager, who comes out a few times a week. We have noticed how much more the garden comes alive when, you know, you hear that expression, plant it and they will come. And it's, there's no lie to that. It is so true. And when we first really got into that a couple of years ago, and it was way overdue, it was night and day difference in that first year. And since then we continue to add, and moreover than ever, we see the requisite amount or the consummate amount of life coming with the extra amount that we're planting that's attracting the wildlife. And so we want to keep that going, and that's exciting.
Right. So that's a good idea. So I guess when we're shopping the seed catalogs this winter, we should have an eye out to some things that would be good for that, sort of not high maintenance and pollinator attracting. Annual, I assume that a lot of these are annuals. Yes, they're annuals.
Both. We're doing both annuals and perennials.
Oh,
we dedicated perimeter beds within the garden. We built those a couple of years ago, and we've got those dedicated to both ornamentals and native perennials. And so we're working through the layout and what stays and where do we, you know, move things around for sun and their preferences. But you know, we have cut flowers in the garden for personal use. It's not like we're selling them or anything like that. So we want to have room for that, but we don't need a lot of room for that. And so my heart is in growing more native perennials in and around the garden.
Right. Some of my raised beds, as I said, are like, you know, 30 years old or whatever. And, you know, some of them are not in good shape, and some of them I've repaired and replaced one wall or another and so forth. And I was also thinking, well, you know, do I keep, you know, the ones that are kind of a mess, do I replace them or, you know what I mean? Do I scale down? I know you've been doing like grow bags on the periphery, I think outside the fenced garden or near your greenhouse. I don't know how you like that. I mean, are you also thinking of sort of scaling down overall at all? Or how about your beds? Are you doing anything needing repair? Or?
Oh my gosh, it's like you're here. Yes.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oof. I am really at that crossroads of facing reality. I have beautiful cedar 6x6 timber raised beds.
Oh.
And I love them, and they have served me very well, but it's also been about 15 years in service in high humidity. And, you know, it's time. They are showing me they are literally in decline now. And so I have to make a really hard decision, and I don't really know what I'm going to do yet, Margaret. I'm not going to give up the space. I'll always grow in that area, and I'll probably keep raised beds, but I can't afford to duplicate the beds that I have, because the cost of 6x6 cedar timbers now, it was expensive 15 years ago.
Right.
But now I don't even think I could go there. So I don't have a replacement option yet. But
Right. It makes every tomato and Brussels sprout quite pricey.
What was that book, the $68 tomato or whatever?
Yeah,
now it's
exactly.
$268.
Exactly.
Tomato.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, one of the things I was able to do with the stretched season, you know, with the fall that just went on forever, was replace a kind of retaining wall at one end of the property, and that was, you know, really rotting, that was sort of like railroad tie-ish looking large old timbers, kind of like what you're saying, but even bigger 8x8s.
Ooh.
And I was really shocked, you know, at the, you know, at the price of the new ones, right? And if you don't want to use a treated product, it's really tricky. It's really tricky because, you know, what do you have locally, what that's milled, or, you know, that's cut locally that you can use that has even 10 or 15 years supposed rot resistance and so forth.
Yes. Well, I'm just, yes. And you're right. What is that product? I will say I'm jealous of a friend, gardener, neighbor of mine who lives 15 minutes away, who's a great gardener. And he has, like me, 6x6 size. They're not timbers. They're made out of granite.
And
he has granite raised beds in the shape of timbers, you know, squared off timbers. And they're to die for. and you will die before they ever go away. You know, that's the thing.
Right.
They're permanent. And I haven't priced them yet, but it's on my list to investigate. I doubt that I could afford them, but that would be the answer for beds in perpetuity,
right?
Not being treated and locally sourced, but to be determined. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there. It's crazy.
The other thing so I think we're both in the same, you know, like fine tuning both what we're planting and also the condition of the beds and what we're gonna do to tweak them or reinvest in them or repair them or whatever, replace them. The other thing that, you know, my water gardens were like, I mean, I'm like Miss Popularity because I'm the only person around here. I mean, I'm not in a densely populated area, but nevertheless, mm-hmm. I get a lot of visitors to my garden that people down the road don't get because I have a couple of in-ground water gardens that I've had for a long time. So I'm kind of like a great place to get a drink on a hot day, you know.
I can attest to that. I've seen it in
the local
you're right.
bar
and the local and so, everything. Yeah.
But those need some repair. You know, I was a thing repair, and the one project I didn't do even in this extended fall because of the heave and thaw coming of the winter. You know, I didn't want to do stonework on the, you know, the edges of ponds and things like that. That needs some of the stuff needs the coping along the edges needs repair. And you know, that's the kind of thing that you want to do it when then the season's going to be stable for, you know, 6 months. Oh. Or do you know what I mean? You don't want to do it just before a big, you know, 2 feet in the ground of frost heaves it up again. You want things to settle. So that wasn't a good time to do that. But at any rate, my water gardens need some tweaking, but thank goodness they're here.
And don't you love them, Margaret? I've seen them in pictures before, I saw them in person. And every time I come, I just see that life that you're talking about. And the sound and just the element of the moving water that brings so much life to it, including sometimes for you, I think bears, right? Don't they kind of
everybody? Everybody. Yeah.
Well, that's on my list. That's on my list for 2025. I would love to have a water garden like yours and I hope too, but I'm working, the plans are in place right now, but it's been on my list for a long time, but I'm more serious than ever in getting that done. Along with a deer fence, which is the other project. The other two major projects are colliding as to who gets done first. But I think the fence is going to have to come first because otherwise I'm going to have some of the same visitors you will that don't get an invitation.
Yeah. And I do have a fence, and that was a big investment maybe 20 something years ago. And I've never looked back. It was the best thing I ever did was put a fence around the place. That's definitely a good idea. Well, and with water features, I mean, I think everyone, you know, doing their looking around the garden, making a list for what they can do better next year. A friend was moving and gave me a kind of a concrete-ish stone bird bath thing on legs, you know, it's kind of Japanese-y looking, and said, oh, do you want this? And I just kind of put it out on the patio where it's not near the other water features. And, you know, the birds just go crazy for it. It's hilarious. So it's like, even I learned, even having had water all these years, I learned we can place small amounts of water around the place and really do a great service, because some of them we use it to bathe and some will use it to drink and, you know, different features for different things. So water. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we take it for granted. We just assume that the wildlife is going to find the water they need somewhere, but that is the case sometimes, but in other times it's not the case. And they're really desperate for it, down to the bees and the other insects who, in my one still bird bath style water feature that's, you know, near the bird feeder, the most common visitor to that are the honeybees that come from some hives I've got. And they surround the entire perimeter of it, and they're drinking water most of the day throughout the summer until it's dark. And so there's little things. And, you know, when I listen to podcasts all over and a lot from the UK, everyone that ever mentions, you know, what's the best thing you ever did for your garden, or what's the most important thing you ever did, almost every time the first thing out of their mouth is, you know, a simple water feature. We're not even necessarily moving water, but just a place that holds water that allows for the wildlife to get what they need.
Mm. So any other sort of like resolves? I mean, I'm on a campaign against invasive things, and I mean, we're always all on that, but I'm being more like, there's a bed in the front that had that chameleon plant that was such an ornamental years ago, Houtunia cordata, and is just a nightmare of all nightmares. And I've tried 50 times to get rid of it and so on and so forth. You know, I've tarped it and solarized it and mowed it and whatever, suffocated it with cardboard and, you know, dug it out a million times. But this time I really, 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 really dug it out, and I'm leaving the bed. I've made a commitment. You can hear me say it out loud.
Okay.
The bed is staying empty for at least a couple of years. I took out all the plants. Nothing can go in there because it is going to resprout, and I'm going to need to redo it and, you know, re-clean it, right? And sometimes we have to let go of this ice, you know, it's going to be an eyesore. It's going to be this empty bed. Right in a prominent spot, but I've got to do that to beat this plant, this invasive, this rhizomatous perennial.
It, yeah, you know, the alternative is you don't do it and you let that invasive perennial come back with a vengeance, and it will. So you've got to bite the bullet and suck it up for a couple of years, and hopefully that will do the trick.
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
Do you have any other things that you're like, I mean, not necessarily invasives, but other things that are sort of on your list of resolves for?
Yes. You know, this year I've really grappled with, you know, I've always been cognizant of the importance of leaving the leaves, and yes, that's been a big topic throughout the fall, and for good reason. And, I've got a 5-acre wooded, you know, semi-wooded property here, so I have no shortage of leaves, but I've never collected the leaves from my own property and moved them or shred them and used them for mulch elsewhere. They just mulch where they fall. Mm-hmm. But in the area that I live, even although it's, you know, rural around my immediate area, there's a lot of subdivisions within 5 minutes from here. And they're kind of required to bag up their leaves and set them at the curb. And then the trash service comes and picks them up literally and takes them to the landfill. Yeah. There's not even an option to take them to a composting facility. So as a big fan of leaf mulch, I take my Saturdays, and I've talked to you about this in the past, but those fall Saturdays are driving around to these bags on the curb and putting them in my pickup truck and driving them back to my place. And, you know, for the early years, I would collect as many bags as I needed, and I'd shred them and put them in my leaf corral, and I'd use them in the following spring. Mm-hmm. Well, over time, I evolved to still collect as many leaves as I could in the course of a day over 3 Saturdays in the fall, November. But I would what I called free the leaves into my native landscape beds, probably about 80% of them. And the other 20 was my compromise to myself that I could shred those and not feel guilty about it, because all of the leaves that I had collected were destined for the landfill anyway. And I was releasing 80% back into my property, hoping that along with it went the overwintering wildlife. But even this year, I struggled with even shredding any of them. And that's not to make anybody feel bad about that.
I know. The more we become conscious of these hidden organisms, these tiny little hidden organisms, just looking to tuck in for the winter or reproduce or whatever they're using, vegetation and faded vegetation and sticks and, you know, twigs and whatever for, the more we become aware of that, the harder it is to take some of the actions that we used to take.
Right. Even with that small percentage. So I'll just tell you real quick what my accidental resolution had turned out to be for this year, and I'm feeling good about this, is I just chose not to, for several reasons, I chose not to mulch anything this year and just take a year off and try to keep figuring it out. Well, in the meantime, acquaintance of mine who lives nearby has a lawn service, and he, during the fall, his crew is sucking up the leaves from his client's property or blowing them out to the street. And then he bought a big leaf vacuum on a big trailer,
right?
And they suck up and they go into the trailer already shredded. Well, he knew my love for shredded leaves, so he reached out to me 2 weeks ago and said, "Hey, you need any leaves?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I don't have any this year, but I are they shredded?" And he said, "They are." And I said, "Bring them." So, Margaret, I got the biggest Christmas present I've ever had.
I was going to say, Christmas came early in Atlanta.
It did, and now it's come twice because he knows.
Cool. That's great.
I'm his dumping source, basically, because here's the thing. I'm just intercepting the handoff because they've already, all the sucking and the shredding was done before I even knew about it. And he's nothing I do or say is going to change what he's going to be doing.
Right.
And so he just is now using me as his drop-off spot. And so now I have about literally 10 years worth of what it would have taken me to do if I were collecting and shredding. And now they're just dumping and there they are.
I love it too. We're running out of time. We have only a minute or so left, but I want to say that I've got to go find out now which of the mow and blow companies around here has one of those machines and wants to dump their leaves.
Well, that's the rest of the story. Thank you for saying that, because for me, you know, surely this is taking place around the country, and
everywhere.
So for those who are struggling with the same issues, that may be an option for you.
Right. So we could get free mulch essentially, or compostable material, you know, organic material. I'm going on the lookout. But Joe, I always love talking to you, and as I said earlier in the show, I'm gonna come be a guest on yours this week on your podcast, so we're gonna give a link to that in the transcript of mine and vice versa. And also we're gonna do with the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com, we're gonna do a giveaway of your book, the vegetable gardening book. Not that you grow a lot of vegetables or anything or have any experience with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Me too.
And ho, 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 and whatever. Happy
right
New
back
Year.
At you. Thanks,
okay.
Margaret.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.